Hello and welcome to Ordinary, a podcast that aims to help Christians live for Christ in everyday life. My name is Josh Bannister, and each week I sit down with a couple of UK pastors, Graham Nichols and Mark Ventham. Today we are joined in the main section by Becca Legg, who is Director of Restored UK, and we have a really illuminating and important discussion about abuse, violence against women, and how Restored UK and the church can support and protect in abusive scenarios. No Sunday roundup today because we wanted to give more time to the main section, but we do have a question from a listener and a bit of news. So enjoy the podcast and I'll catch you on the other side.
My name is Graham Nichols.
And I'm Mark Ventham.
And I'm Josh Bannister, and you're listening to Ordinary. Welcome back to the podcast. We're going to kick off today's episode with a question, actually. This question's come from Katie. Let me read it out. As a busy mum who does work inside of the home too, I absolutely cherish my Bible times. I prioritise them and enjoy them richly. But it's so difficult to find time to read uninterrupted. I found 20 minutes before breakfast works best for me. But my question is, do you think it's reasonable to give my kids snacks and put them in front of the TV and instill within them that they're not able to disturb me when I'm reading the Bible, unless it's an emergency, and to tell them off when they do? I can't work out if that's reasonable or important or if it's selfish and harsh. Let's start there, guys.
It's a very specific question. By the way, just as a fun answer, the idea of a busy mum, I'm not sure there's an unbusy mum, like whatever the opposite of busy is, because mumming is quite busy at all stages.
A 90-year-old mum? She might be not as busy.
I suppose. They could be busy doing lots of good stuff. But yeah, we understand the context.
Depends if they've left home or not.
Yeah, we understand the context really well, yes. I think, of course, personal Bible reading is important and a really good thing to do. I suppose when I kind of heard the question, I thought, there are different seasons of your life, and there may be times when you have to say, not I will abandon this, but it's not about me and my sort of personal time. How am I doing with family time? How am I doing with husband and wife time? Rather than how am I sort of carving out this time? And then, so that was one thing just to raise as a sort of question, not to say you shouldn't carve out this time, but just to sort of think, at certain seasons in your life, having sort of very private moments, although it's a really good thing, can become a sort of an idol in itself in a weird way. That might be heresy to say that, but I think it can.
No, I think that's a helpful starting point.
Oh, good, because we didn't plan this, and I was just kind of tentatively saying it, and you guys.
I think it is worth. There are seasons, so we recognise that, and it may mean that therefore, in other seasons you have longer, you have better, and it is, and it's always true, isn't it, to guard our hearts of what it is that is.
Is it the peace and quiet we're seeking, or is it actually time with God?
Absolutely.
And then
that's a fair point.
Yeah, and then I guess the other part of the question is, if you're in a relationship where there is a husband and a wife, then can your husband help you in some way, rather than necessarily having to put the kids in front? But in the end, if for whatever reason you need to do something that's important, there's no sort of moral failure in putting your kids in front of the television for some minutes, eating cheddars or gummy bears or whatever.
I can't think who it is, but there is a kind of famous pastor, whose mother used to actually read her Bible and had the apron over her head. And it was her kind of way of signalling to the kids, this is my time with Jesus, don't interrupt. So it's not, it is, in the history of the church, this has always been an issue for busy mums, trying to get away. And I think it's not wrong to also teach our children that actually there is a priority that is greater than them.
Yeah.
So that's not a wrong thing in itself to say, actually, do you know what? Yeah. My priority with Jesus is more important than actually your needs right now, unless it's important. So I think it's a right thing to set that expectation and boundary.
Yeah.
In the same way you're setting a right boundary of saying, actually, at times it's a right thing for a mother and a father to be able to speak and talk without being interrupted by the children. That's that's again a right boundary to put in place. So I don't think we shouldn't worry about that in all of those things as well.
God willing, Josh, this will be you soon.
There's going to be a lot of boundaries.
I'm now recording my music. Go away, you 6-month-year-old. And read a little backing track to book.
Yeah. Time for news now. Give us your views. News.
A headline on BBC News: puberty blockers for under 16s unlikely to be able to give informed consent. Some High Court judges have ruled that under 16s can't give informed consent to sort of start that very sort of invasive and semi-permanent, if not permanent, procedure of having treatment that stops puberty. Now, this is a really positive thing as Christians. That's kind of our take on it. Graham and Mark, do you have thoughts on that development in the news?
Yeah, I was really pleased to see it. And I think the logical, reasonable case is very strong. But I'm glad that came through, because there's been a lot of very illogical, uncompassionate talk around this topic. And there just seems to be in the culture, particularly to do with transgenderism, a kind of reversal going on. So I think it's part of that trend that people are realising this is just crazy child abuse allowing this to happen. Because you don't have capacity at that age. But we've been saying it, and lots of sort of advocacy organisations have been saying it for quite a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, the judgment's not quite as emphatic as it might have been, because it's a bit of a probably in there. But it's pretty good.
I think it's just supporting what the Bible teaches.
Yeah.
Fundamentally, but also what we're seeing elsewhere. So I think I quoted on Sunday morning the Twitter feed that went viral of a 5-year-old boy who declared in front of, I think it was a church service, sadly, in the US, you know, I want to be a girl. 2 years later, it actually wants to be a boy. And I think, you know, that's the reality, isn't it? So actually, they can't have that consent. Things are changing. People are feeling different ways, you know, and I think actually it's a really good outcome.
Yeah, and I think, in fact, you know, there's the person in the article, Kira Bell, who was quite involved, I think, in the whole thing, was, you know, suggesting, arguing that she should have been challenged more over her decision to want to transition to a male, and you know, she now, looking back, feels that she wasn't able to make that decision soundly, and that she wished, or she argued for more resistance to that. So a positive thing.
Yeah, man, it's good to celebrate that. It's good that you brought it up, really, Josh, because sometimes we're just kind of decrying the decline in society. So it's really good to give thanks for something good that's happening.
I bet that you thought it was nearly over, but we haven't started yet. It's just like on Sunday you thought we were done, but you still had communion left.
Today we're joined by Becca Legg, who is director of Restored UK, which is an organisation with a heart for ending domestic abuse and violence against women, essentially. And they do a lot of work, which we're going to get. There's tons to talk about today, and we're going to get into the details and all that good stuff. But I guess to sort of give us a good introduction, Becca, could you just sort of give us background on you, like your sort of testimony in short, and where you came from, and how you came to be part of this organisation today?
Oh, that's if we're not careful, that could be quite a long answer, because it's been quite a convoluted road.
Right.
Because, you know, I think God sometimes works these stories through our lives, doesn't he? And it isn't until you get quite like decades down the line, which I hate admitting is true for me, and you go, oh, that's what you were doing. So, you know, I was raised in a Christian family and ended up going to university and training to be a teacher. And my very first job actually was teaching at a private school in Kenya, which came as a surprise because I was actually looking for jobs in Bristol. but, you know, I saw this job advert and got caught up by the romanticism of the highlands of Kenya. And so I ended up in this Christian school teaching, and it was wonderful. And met my first husband over there, actually, and got married. But actually, that first marriage was a very, very difficult one and very abusive. And I ended up coming home with two little girls, one aged 3 months, the other aged 18 months, nearly 18 years ago now. And having a very different life to the one that I'd anticipated. But, you know, I kind of carried on. I kept working. I rebuilt my life, got my children, you know, managed to raise them. And over the years, God was just extraordinary at the way that he pieced my life back together again. And I've done a whole range of jobs over the years as well. So I've, you know, was trained as a teacher. I worked as an office manager when I was a single mom trying to work out what to do and knew that I could do that. I've worked locally in a sexual assault centre as well, actually, working, doing their education programme, going into schools, helping young people to navigate just the complicatedness of relationships and understanding, you know, what does a good relationship look like? I've worked for Compassion as PR and media manager. I've overseen, I edit a magazine. My husband edits a magazine called Sorted, and along the way, that's a magazine for men, Christian men. Along the way, we picked up this other amazing magazine called Liberty for Women, and I've edited that and ended up going to Bible school and doing my master's in theology. And finally ended up working in church leadership, none of which are obvious ways of landing in the job that I have now. But what I can see is that looking back, God was taking what was in me actually as a small child to really care for young women and to help them to be all that God had God had created them for. And along the way, he's been equipping me in, you know, this abnormal way by putting me in one job over here and gaining some skills and then over here and then some training. And so then about a year ago, I saw that this job was coming up at Restored. This amazing organisation that I already knew about. And I realised and had this kind of God tug within me of, gosh, actually, Becca, maybe that's something that you should go for. Immediately felt inadequate, as usual. But then realised that actually maybe this is where I'd been coming from. So God's been extraordinary, actually, at the way that he's done that. But I'm sat here now in this job, leading this incredible organisation, you know, helping the church to stand at the front of, you know, ending violence against women and girls and ending domestic abuse. And every time I feel overwhelmed by the size, you know, the scale of the task, I just think, no, I'm just so confident this is where God's called me that I have to be just as confident that he'll equip me going forward.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Could you, I suppose for me as a sort of, I might represent the average naive listener who doesn't know the scale of the issue. I'd love you to sort of give us an idea of the prevalence of sort of abuse and the scale of the issue that you're actually, you know, looking to fight against.
Oh, it's so much bigger than people realise. Partly because it's something we don't like to think about, and partly because it's very hidden by its very nature, and people don't talk about it. But the reality is that in the UK alone, 2 women a week die at the hands of somebody who was meant to love them.
Wow.
You know, and that's death. So that's at the very, very extreme end. And when you bring it back to who's affected by domestic abuse in all its different forms, and I guess we'll talk about that in just a minute, actually they reckon that about 1 in 4 women and about 1 in 6 men will experience domestic abuse in their lifetime.
1 in 4 wow. is phenomenal.
So really, really 4. Prevalent.
It is. It's quite sobering, yeah. When you think about it.
Go ahead.
I was just really in terms of, I think it would help us understand, you know, what do we mean by domestic abuse? Because I think often we hear that and we think physical, but I know it's actually a lot wider than that. I think it'd just be helpful, because I think when we talk about 1 in 4, we're not talking about 1 woman in 4 being just violently hit or beaten.
Well, I think
in
we
that
think
sense.
Violent physical, don't we, as well? Not just physical, we think violent physical.
But often. It would be really helpful just to kind of just help us broaden our understanding of what actually we mean by abuse and how that played out in all its various forms.
Yeah, it is helpful, because I think otherwise we're limited to only if we've seen somebody's got a broken bone or a bruise. And actually, I think anybody who's been through domestic abuse would tell you that often emotional abuse is worse. It has deeper, longer lasting impacts on people, and yet it sometimes gets trivialised and written off as not so important. But so I guess what might be helpful is, in the UK, domestic abuse is defined like this. I'll read it so that we get it word for word. So it's categorised by any incident, so that's just a one-off, or a pattern of incidents of controlling, coercive or threatening behaviour, violence or abuse between those aged 16 or over who are or have been intimate partners or family members. And it might include physical abuse, so it might look the way that you expect, you know, black eye. But it might be emotional. It might just be about that relentless undermining of somebody's self-worth that you hear, and psychological, those two are very closely tied. Might be sexual abuse, which again you might go, oh yeah, no, I would expect that. And financial abuse is another one that's kind of specifically recognized, that I think again people don't always quite understand that that can be a thing. But yeah, so physical, emotional, psychological, sexual and financial, and it could look like any of those, it could look like all of them. At different times. But controlling, I think that controlling coercive behaviour is what sits probably at the heart of all of that.
Power and control, and those two kind of the key words, aren't they, in that sense? Yeah.
Just to help people in kind of understanding where the, I don't know, where the overlap is, but where does it change from being a bad relationship where perhaps a couple are not getting on, or a relationship where a man or a woman is controlling the situation, but there's sort of compliance on both sides and everyone's happy in a way. What marks the sort of danger of where this is no longer some, you know, acceptable level, but something's changed? Is there a helpful overlap, or is it just anything? Because, you know, obviously cruel words happen between couples all the time.
Yeah, we all have disagreements. We all, you know, most of us have fights. It's, you know, we do, yes, don't we? We have these disagreements that escalate into arguments, and you know, we all have those things. But once it, and tipping over the balance, there isn't a line that you cross per se that would work across one relationship to the next. And I had a conversation with a friend recently. Oh, no, it must have been more than recently, because it was clearly pre-lockdown, and we were going away somewhere for a couple of days. And as I arrived, my husband texted me and said, oh, you know, glad to see you there. Have a lovely time. And she went, how does he know you're here? And I said, oh, he'll have been tracking me on my phone, because we've, you know, it's a family. We've got, you know, find my phone. Where is everybody? Yeah. And she went, don't you feel uncomfortable that he does that? And I said, not in the slightest, because I know the motivation behind it is checking I'm okay. And I said, but actually there would be other relationships where that would be checking on. And that's different. Checking you're where you said you'd be. Checking that I know exactly where you are at every moment. And it might look like the exact same behaviour, you know, but actually different. And sometimes it's about how it makes you feel on the inside. Am I safe with this person? Is somebody building me up fundamentally over the long picture? Or somewhere underneath this, is there a constant undermining of my personality, having to persistently submit in the wrong way to theirs? You know, like, it isn't straightforward. It is hazy when that line gets crossed. There isn't a moment at which that's okay. And the truth is, there are some relationships where one person, you know, takes the lead in certain ways because that's where their strength lies. You know, in my marriage now, you know, I'm the one who sorts out all the finances because I'm the one who understands it. But then there's other places where Steve takes the lead because that's his strength. But that's about mutual, you know, that's about mutuality and partnership, and it is difficult.
I guess the words like coercive and safety are quite helpful there. That coercive control is different to control. Coercive, you know, means that the person being controlled is not necessarily a willing partner in that.
Yeah.
There's some degree of persuasion, not even persuasion, whatever the best word would be, coercion is the word.
Yeah, the lack of choice.
Making them do the thing rather than the person saying, no, I'm okay. You know, I'm okay that you do the finance, or I'm okay that you understand technology or whatever it is. Then the safety aspect, that's really helpful to me, the safety aspect. Just thinking you could apply that to emotional safety as well, I guess. So you could say that will be a characteristic where the person feels unsafe. That would be quite helpful. Yeah, thank you. Sorry, I'm sure you've answered that 100 times, but it's just helpful.
It's always a helpful question. I think, you know, and I think that emotional safety, I was having a conversation with a friend of mine recently about, you know, in a marriage that isn't brilliant at the moment. And she said, I've realised there are just some things that I won't say in our house. I won't reveal certain things at the moment because I don't feel safe for him to know that. If I've got something that's really exciting, I'm aware that at the moment, if I share that, like, he'll wreck everything. And you go, well, actually, that is not a healthy relationship. Like, if you can't share things that bring you joy, and you can't share things that make you sad for fear of how somebody might twist them or turn them on you, something's gone, like, really wrong. That's not okay.
Yeah, that's helpful. Give us a quick insight into the impact that lockdown has had on what you're seeing as an organisation? Are you seeing a lot more abuse than sort of pre-lockdown?
I think it's been really obvious in all the, you know, certainly in those first few months, that it was all over the news, wasn't it, that, you know, domestic abuse was up. And there were some statistics, like organisations like Refuge, which holds the, you know, the National Domestic Abuse Helpline. There was at one point which they had a 700% increase in calls,
wow.
Which is something else. And I know that for us, and bearing in mind that we're a little bit niche, you know, we're focused on supporting Christians very much.
Right.
But we saw certainly, you know, our statistics in May, for example, the visits to our website were double what they were the year before in the same period.
Wow.
So that's, and we have a survivors network where Christian survivors of domestic abuse are able to come together and receive. It's not a helpline, but there's articles and, you know, signposting to helpful things. And we have a Facebook group where people can do peer support. But we had, in April, we had 150 members in that network.
Mm-hmm.
And now we've got nearly 250. And, you know, over 4 years, mm-hmm. we grew to 150. And in 6 months, we've, you know, gone up by another 2/3. So,
yeah,
you know, it's...
it's a lot of growth, definitely. Yeah. And so just to finish building this contextual picture before we start talking about caring for people who've been abused, like... like you said in that last piece, you were talking about you were primarily focused on sort of the church side supporting Christians. Do those figures of sort of the prevalence of abuse, do they translate to the church as well? Or is you know, how much abuse is there going on in the church?
More than we like to think. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, we did some research a couple of years ago with the Universities of Coventry and Leicester. And they assisted us with it. And we discovered that actually the rates are really the same in the church as they are outside, which is pretty devastating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because we want the church to be this lovely, safe place.
Yeah.
And the truth is it's not. And some of the other things we discovered along with that were that actually then it meant that Christians actually often found it harder to speak up about what was going on because there's this almost extra pressure as a Christian to have a good marriage, for things to be okay. It's hard to speak up. It's especially hard if the person who's abusing you actually has any position of leadership within the church. Like, that's really hard to speak up then. And sometimes our theology, however unintentionally, mm-hmm. can feed that and make it hard as well. And I think that's something that we always need to be aware of in the midst of everything.
I think that's just sobering. When we think, I think that's part of the reason why we wanted you to join us today, just because I think, you know, just thinking about this whole area and that actually that it is actually just as prevalent in the church, and that one in four. And of course, we recognise, don't we, that theology does hide that, you know, in the sense of even if we disagree on some ways of interpreting Ephesians 5 or Genesis, actually it can be used, even if on a, you know, a headship submission, we use the language to cover our bad behaviour that the Bible never intends or ever speaks of.
Yeah.
Your authority in the Bible is never abusive. It's always love. It's always sacrificial.
Yeah.
And, you know, so when that then gets misconstrued or misheard, I think that's, you know, that's where it covers, and the Bible covers it. And you know, sadly, we've all heard of those tragic stories where theology has been used to kind of hide or allow abuse to carry on. And that can never be right.
Yeah, I read a book recently from, I was just looking behind, that you'll never know if you're listening, but I've been looking behind to my bookshelf, can't remember what it's, by Evangelical Movement of Wales, I think, which is basically a series of stories. And I was pretty shocked. This is a very mainstream sort of conservative publisher who was publishing this book of stories, and it was in that kind of network. And you pompously think that network, you know, the Evangelical Movement of Wales would be, you know, completely free of that. And the quantity of stories, and I think the sobering thing is that you recognise the seeds of it in lots of relationships, including your own. You know, by God's grace, it's not happening in many places, but it you recognise the seeds of it, and that was the kind of scary thing. And I think that's why the overlap and the danger signs are really helpful to think about, things that maybe we should repent of now to not get to that position, if you know what I mean. But yeah, just to support what you're saying, really, you would know better than us. But there's plenty of stories, you know. We come across stories of people, and then there's stuff that's borderline, that's really hard to work out. You know, a husband who controls his wife's spending and you're not quite sure. Those are really difficult to work out. Is this just good management and recognition of skill sets, or is this a sort of way of control, you know, petrol money and food money, and you can't use the car now and then, or, you know, all that. I don't know. Those are really hard to judge from the outside, to be honest.
It is. And it is about getting to the root. Because, again, I could think of two examples. I've got one friend, his husband used to, you know, works for the tax office, and he's phenomenal at budgeting and having things do. And she literally just goes, darling, tell me what I can, you know, how are we going to do this? I'll stick within what we said, you know, and that is a totally joint partnership. But I know of another couple where a little tiny bit of money was gone. Well, this is what you've got for shopping, and this is what you've got for this. And if you go beyond that, that's up to you to find the extra money. And, you know, and actually, I'm not paying for this, or this, because I consider those not to be my responsibility. And that was financial abuse. You know, that was clean and simple. No, you're not having your name on the house deeds. No, you're not doing this. I'm telling you what you can have, and beyond that, there's nothing. And but you can hear the different heart motive in them. But sometimes you've got to do bit of digging to go, is this mutual, or is somebody feeling like they have no choice?
So let's situate into that because I think that'd be really helpful.
What are the kind of things about how we care for those who are abusing? So, you know, growing our church leaders, what are some of the signs? Have you had those conversations? If you sense something,
Maybe we'll break that down, but let's go in that general direction.
Do you know what? I'll start off with, as church leaders, what can you do, big picture? Because I think there's a few things that you can do that often we just don't even think about. And one of those is just to talk about it as a church leader, to talk about it in a church context. When we did our research, we discovered that nearly 60% of people had never, ever heard a sermon on domestic abuse. 60% of churchgoers, never, you know, which would include me probably, actually, until much more recently when I started doing it myself, because it's not something we talk about very often. But actually, just to talk about it and to mention it and to talk about power and control in any relationship, I think that's a helpful thing. You know, I think we could look at putting information on, you know, well, when church is open again, you know, being able to do things like putting stickers on the back of toilet doors so that's you know, help point people to helplines if they need it, to get in touch with your local services and make sure you know where they are and what are they, you know, where do we have a refuge locally? You probably do. And actually, how could we support them? How could we pray for them, if not, you know, if we don't do anything practical? But how can we talk about it? And how, as church leaders, when are those opportunities for us to say, if you are struggling with this, you can come and talk to us? Because if we never talk about it, even without meaning to, we make it taboo. And I think just speaking up about it means that we recognize it might be happening. We recognize it might be happening to you. And if it is, we want to work with you to help you get safe. And that's really important. And, you know, preaching about it really, really helps. But then within the church, I mean, as an organisation, we offer training on all of this. So you're very welcome to come to our website and find out more about that. But making sure that you've got a policy on what would you do if somebody came and disclosed domestic abuse to you. You know, we've all got safeguarding policies if children disclosed abuse. But actually, what would we do if it was a woman in our church or a man in our church saying, you know, this is going on at home? How do we handle that? Have we got something set up and ready? Because those things actually are big picture things you can have ready, and to make sure that your congregation know that this is a safe place to talk about it.
Yeah, that's really great. And what about, like, digging into one of those other aspects that Mark was talking about, in sort of recognizing signs? Like you said, there's a lot of people who would struggle potentially to speak up, and a part of caring for your for the people of the church, I suppose, is giving them a platform to do that, or at least, I don't know, asking questions or being on the watch, you know, for each other. What does that look like?
Yeah, it's part of being a pastor, isn't it? It's keeping a little eye on your flock. And I think, you know, if somebody turned up with a black eye, you'd go, gosh, what happened? But of course, 9 times out of 10, it's not going to look like that. But I think if you notice that somebody suddenly actually quite shifts in their behaviour or their attitude or their well-being, it's just always worth a question. Hey, I've noticed that you seem a bit more withdrawn. I've noticed you've been, you know, you haven't been around much recently. is everything okay? Like, it can be as simple as that. Mm-hmm. But there are some things that you can notice. So again, I know I've got an example. I used to be on the leadership team myself in a church, and we had a lady who had volunteered to help with a project that we were running. And when I announced it in the staff team, one of the other members of staff went, "Oh golly, no, she's a nightmare. She's really flaky. She won't turn up." And I was like, "Oh, but she was so keen. She really wanted to get involved." And this other lady was like, "Oh, no." Anyway, she didn't turn up and she did let me down. But years later, I discovered that that was because her husband just wouldn't let her out the door. So, and he was forever doing it. And it wasn't mm-hmm. like she was flaky. That was the end result. But it wasn't really her. Mm-hmm. It was him saying, "Well, I don't want you to do that because I want you to be at home. And I don't like you helping other people. I only want you to be here for me." And he went, oh, that's interesting, you know. And I didn't know, I didn't think to ask a question about it. I just went, oh, flaky, you know. And it's about looking deeper sometimes. It's about, you know, if somebody, and it, again, it's so difficult because I would, if somebody asked me if I want to do something, I might well say, "Oh, do you know what? I'll just check with my husband because I'm checking. We haven't got other plans in the evening." I'm not necessarily asking his permission to do something because I don't need his permission to do it. Mm-hmm. But if somebody is repeatedly needing to, you know, check in, make sure it's okay, mm-hmm. it might, but no, not all these things might, but they might not be.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of weighing it up all the time and just watching how many of these things perhaps are flashing up. When somebody starts to be very isolated, that's another big flag.
When it's physical, does the person sometimes change what they're wearing, perhaps to cover up more? Is that a sign, or is that just not?
Yeah, might be wearing a lot of makeup to hide something, but often abusers are quite clever at hurting people where nobody will see.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. And then I suppose, sort of, to make it even more, I don't know, you obviously as a service are there for people to reach out to as individuals. That's right, isn't it?
Yes.
How could somebody, if they were in a situation themselves now, sort of what could they do to look for help and support?
Okay, so I would say a couple of things. So so our website is restored-uk.org. Really easy to find, restored-uk.org. And if you find us, there's masses of information on there. But we're not a national helpline, but there is a national helpline. And the national helpline is 0800 2000 247. So 0800 2000 247 is a way to remember that. And they're open 24/7. And they are brilliant. And they've got all kinds of advice for all kinds of situations. We actually have a survivor's handbook that we send out free to anybody who wants it. It's always important that if you're having that sent to you, you've got an address where you feel it's safe for that to be sent to. And that's got masses of practical advice in it and emotional advice and some theological sections towards the back as well, which can be very helpful. But if you're in a situation, but I would also always say, if you're in a situation where you're in imminent danger, you need to call 999. Like, that's a no-brainer. Mm-hmm. It's a 999. And if you can't speak, because it's not safe to speak, you can press 5, number 5, and then some instructions will be spoken to you, which enable you to key in answers rather than having to speak out loud. And then the police know that means it's not safe for you to speak, and they'll come. So right. That's a very, very useful thing to have. But, you know, if it's not imminent danger, you know, then, and we've kind of come back a level from that, then do talk to somebody. Yeah.
Would you ever advise someone to talk to the potential abuser, or would you assume that by this time that it's got beyond that sort of thing?
So the victim or the church leader,
the
or
victim.
So
if you're feeling you might be sort of on the borderline of, "I feel like I might be being abused in this relationship," you know, you're listening to this podcast and you're thinking, "Do I first talk to my husband or my wife? Do I first talk to my church leader?" It's not escalated in my mind that I need to, you know, go to you guys necessarily. I'm sort of not sure. I'm just trying to kind of think, now because I've heard this, I'm thinking perhaps I'm in an abusive relationship, and shall I talk to my husband or wife? You know, what advice would you give?
I would be careful. I think the thing that we always need to remember as well is, by the time anybody ever speaks to anybody else, they will have spoken to their husband or wife.
Helpful.
You know, they will have. You know, I think it's always passes those, that test that Jesus gave. The disciples and those that were listening, and he said, you know, if you've got a problem, take it to the person involved, and if not, then get one other person involved, and if not, then, you know, and then it kind of escalates. But actually, by the time anybody comes to talk to you or me or anybody else, they will have spoken to their husband or wife a lot, like more times than Jesus said to. You know, like they will have done. They'll have had this conversation about that. That felt really unkind. That felt this. And of course, actually, we have to remember that we need to be very careful with people experiencing abuse, because if somebody is exerting control over them, then actually the minute that they start to think that that person is trying to regain control or to get free or to do anything to change the dynamics, there is the potential for that to become a much more dangerous situation. Because often in those situations, abusers will go, they'll take a number of different tactics. They can become very compliant, very apologetic. They can appear to be terribly upset about all that's happened. But actually, it's a bit of a tactic to manipulate and get things back on track. If that doesn't work, then actually they might become very angry. And that might be then when violence comes in. So actually, I always urge incredible caution about approaching abusers in a way that would challenge them like that.
And also just on that, in terms of, presumably as well, just following on that, someone who has, in an abusive relationship, comes for help, sometimes the it's also making sure they have a good safety plan out, which doesn't necessarily mean you get them out immediately, because actually they might be in more danger by leaving quickly because of tendencies of the person for a number of reasons. But it's just, sometimes I think we think you just got to get them out, but actually unless you can get them out to a very safe place and they can get what they need out, they can actually be in far more danger, particularly if the person has.
Just to put it out there, I know we're nearly out of time, but it's also worth saying, anyone listening who is potentially an abuser, we want to encourage them to get help too, because you may recognise yourself in some of these descriptions and think, oh, maybe I thought I was just being a man or a woman in a relationship, but I'm actually an abuser. To be fair, we've been through Proverbs recently, and we have mentioned abuse a couple of times in terms of the harsh words and anger and all those sort of things. But probably I can remember it because it is unusual that we've recently mentioned it. But then we encourage people to come forward if they felt their temper was out of control, or if they felt they were living with someone whose temper was out of control. As an example,
It's worth saying, if people are listening and they have that concern that they are being abused in any of those forms that Becca mentioned, then do be in touch with us, with either Becca herself at renewed-uk or with Graham or I. We'd be more than happy to talk and give help as we can.
Absolutely, and you can reach out to ordinary@cchh.org.uk. We can pass things on to Becca if that's needed. I'm sure Becca would be happy to help out. Becca, that website address one more time.
Restored-uk.org.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for spending some time with us. We really appreciate it. It's been great.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Becca.
Great to have Becca on the podcast today. And just to reiterate, do use those contact points if you need to reach out and speak to somebody. Also, continue to email us with your thoughts and your questions and your ideas for future episodes. We love to have those. Come back next week. There'll be another brand new episode waiting for you. See you next time.